Welcome, everyone, to our inner circle. We're just delighted today to have Dr. Vermeer, who is one of the top researchers in the world in vitamin K2. And this is an emerging, powerful nutrient that is really falling shortly behind vitamin D as a leading nutrient that has so many beneficial actions. And we'll go into those in more detail, Dr. Vermeer. Dr. Vermeer, can you introduce yourself and explain to our listeners some of your training and what your
Yes.
specific experience and where you're located, because you're overseas in Europe?
Okay. I'm living in Maastricht, the Netherlands. That is a small town in the south of the country. I got my education in Leiden. That is the oldest university of the Netherlands. But in Maastricht, that's the youngest one. And I have helped start up this university in Maastricht. And already in 1975, I founded there my vitamin K group, research group. And I have continuously enlarged this group. We started with two, and now we are with 12 people. And we are only working on vitamin K. And to my knowledge, this is by far the largest research group on vitamin K. I'm a biochemist by training. I did my PhD in Leiden, and I have in my group several PhD postdocs. I have an clinical person. I have technicians, highly trained. So the whole group is well, we're collaborating and working on vitamin K and vitamin K dependent proteins. Because when you say vitamin K, then it's one thing, but vitamin K has a certain action in the body, and that is it helps activate certain proteins, and you have to be able to measure those proteins to quantify them and see how active they are.
Okay, well,
And that is mainly
we're
what we
definitely
do.
going to go into that because that's one of the areas that I really want to explore with you is the way to measure your vitamin K2 and such. But is your focus of research primarily on vitamin K1 and K2 or almost exclusively on vitamin K2?
We started on K1, and then, well, I think 10, 15 years, it's 12 years ago, I think. Then we discovered the superb effects of vitamin K2. That was in a collaborative study together with the Rotterdam University, where we differentiated between intake in K1 and intake in K2. And there we saw that those who had a high K1 intake had normal health, but if the high K2 intake was just selected, then you saw major advantages for cardiovascular health. So those with a high K2 intake had lower cardiovascular mortality, lower coronary calcification, and that kind of things.
Or were there any other organ systems that you noticed improvements in other than the cardiovascular system?
Yes, of course, there is also the bone, which is which very much benefits from high vitamin K intake, and then especially again vitamin K2. But recently, a German group has discovered that vitamin K2 also protects substantially against prostate cancer.
Well, that's exciting because that's one of the leading causes of cancer in men in the US at least.
Yes, it has been published, I think, earlier this year, and it was a massive effect. I think that the highest quartile for intake of K2 had 50% lower prostate cancer. So that is substantial.
Are there from a theoretical perspective, are there any other benefits that you're speculating or that you're suspicious of? Because many times it just takes a while to tease out the details in actual studies, but you've got a really good idea that there may be something some other benefits that are emerging that you haven't yet really
Oh yes.
quantified.
Oh yes. The thing that's now emerging, that is osteoarthritis, so diseases of the cartilage. That's done. The first publication was from Sarah Booth's lab. That's from Boston, and it shows that again that high vitamin K intake has a lower risk for osteoarthritis. And there is one maybe very far-fetched item, and that is the brain. And I don't know what things in the brain, maybe it is something linked to dementia, maybe it is something else, but we are on the track of brain.
Oh, that's excellent. So now with vitamin D, which has gotten quite a lot of attention in the media and certainly the scientific community, I've had an opportunity to interview Dr. Robert Heaney. I don't know if you're familiar with him, but he really is, in many regards, certainly one of the major researchers and pioneers in this field. And he specifically told me that 99% of what we learned about vitamin D was in the last 10 years, and related that to the fact that we had an assay to measure vitamin D just relatively recently in the late 90s. It became commercially available. And I'm wondering if you could comment on the state of the field at this point with respect to developing some type of quantitative titer or measure of someone's vitamin K2 status, because it seems to me you could have all the best compelling information in the world, but unless you're able to measure it in people at a practical level, it's going to be difficult to implement and monitor.
Yeah, it's very good that you come up with this. Vitamin K measurements in blood plasma or so can be done quite accurately. But the question is whether it's helpful, because it mainly reflects what you have eaten last day.
That's interesting.
Yeah, but there is another way you can do this. You can measure the activity of the vitamin K-dependent proteins. And there we are coming to the area of the vessel wall again. So the vessel wall has only one tool to protect itself against calcification. And that is matrix GLA protein, abbreviated as MGP. Mm-hmm. And there are two forms, that is active MGP and inactive MGP. And the active form is made in vitamin K sufficiency, and inactive MGP is made when you have insufficient vitamin K intake. And if you want to know your vitamin K status in the vasculature, then you have to measure the circulating level of inactive MGP. And we have a patent on the method doing that. This patent has been granted also in the United States, and this is a very accurate and good method, and it protects your risk for getting calcified. So to have your arteries calcified. Yes.
That's very exciting. Are there any companies that have commercially made this kit, this assay that you've patented, available so that the big labs like Quest or LabCorp can actually make it available to patients?
Yeah, there are several labs with a high interest in this technique. But of course, you can imagine this is a vast amount of money that play around here. And we are now trying to select the correct strategy to commercialize this.
Okay.
Suppose that you have a method to screen the whole population for a risk of artery calcification. Another option of this test, it's a little bit different application, is that you can more or less quantify the amount of calcium present already in the arteries. Mm-hmm. So you can do a pre-selection of those who need very expensive techniques like electron beam computed tomography and that kind of things. You can just take a drop of blood and you can record how much calcium is in the arteries. That's unbelievable, but it works.
Do you have, it's very exciting. Do you have any estimates or ideas and projections as to what the cost of this test will be? Will it be something under 100, 500, 1,000?
Oh, the test itself can be made just like what they call a microtiter plate assay or an automated clinical lab assay. And then we are speaking about, say, prices of between $20 and $50 or so, maybe less if it's scaled up.
Okay, that's very exciting. And